Morning, everybody.
Morning.
Please, everyone, sit down. Okay. We have some guests. Well, Louis, we can, let's have everyone introduce themselves and get started.
Okay, let me put us on the record and I'll call the case. The United States Court of International Trade is now in session. The Honorable Timothy M. Reif now presiding before court number 20CV3885, Jiangsu Semel Bamboo and Wood Industry Company Limited et al. Versus United States. Will counsel please state your names for the record, starting with plaintiff's counsel.
Steve Brophy, Hush Blackwell, on behalf of Jiangsu Senma.
Mark Ludwikowski from Clark Hill, on behalf of Jiangsu Guyu.
Kelly Geddes, on behalf of the United States, joined by John Zachary Forbes, on behalf of the Department of Commerce.
And we have some counsel that who are remote.
And we have counsel appearing remote. Please state your names for the record.
Good morning. Sarah Wiss from Morey & Grimson on behalf of plaintiffs Fine Furniture Shanghai Limited, Double F Limited.
Good morning. I'm Lisbeth Levinson from Fox Rothschild. I'm here today on behalf of Gallagher Metropolitan Hardwood Floor & Decor and MCI International.
Okay, is that it, Louis?
I don't, Adams Lee is supposed to be on.
Okay. Anyone else from counsel? Okay. My team will start with my senior law clerk.
Good morning, Sibylla Grennan, senior law clerk to Judge Wright.
Sangman.
Hi, I'm Sangman. Good morning, my name is Alex O'Connor.
And Wesley? Chen is on, go ahead.
I'm Wesley, I'm a judicial intern to Judge Reif.
Okay, good morning, everybody. And thanks for appearing one way or another. So we have two basic questions today. I'm gonna ask the government to lead for both of them, if you can start us off, and then we'll go to plaintiff and plaintiff interveners.
Good morning, Your Honor. Would you like us to start?
Yeah, please.
Okay. apologies. Good morning, Your Honor. With respect to the court's first question, which was how Commerce has demonstrated in this case that it was otherwise reasonable to calculate the all others rate based on only one respondent, Commerce carefully considered the Federal Circuit's decision in YC Rubber. It looked to the language saying that, well, it is generally required that the all others rate include more than one. It particularly noted that the question in that case was whether that was necessary, where Commerce, as you know, had not demonstrated why it was otherwise reasonable. In this case, Commerce carefully analyzed that question. At this point, it was more than a year and a half past the point where it had published the final results. So it weighed the administrative burden of going back and selecting and reviewing an entire additional respondent, a very burdensome process that Commerce usually has about a year to complete, against the sort of marginal benefit of reviewing an additional respondent, where it had already reviewed a respondent that was one of the largest exporters during the period of review. We can go into more specific numbers there in a confidential session if necessary. But Commerce determined that the mandatory respondent it had reviewed was sufficiently representative. The benefits of reviewing an additional or more than one additional respondent would be marginal. And weighing that against the fairly extreme burden of going back and reviewing another respondent, which would be a fairly extraordinary remedy. We haven't identified any cases where Commerce has chosen to do that in the past to remedy an issue that arose this late in the process. Based on that weighing, Commerce concluded that it was otherwise reasonable in the circumstance, notwithstanding the general rule of including more than one rate. And that decision, even if the court would reach a different conclusion if it were to weigh those factors itself, that was within the discretion that the Federal Circuit left to Commerce in this case. Would you like us to go to the second question, or did you want to let plaintiffs respond?
No, let's pause on the first question. I guess what I'm wondering, Ms. Geddes, is the reason we're this late in the case is that Commerce relied on some very erroneous data at the beginning of the case. So it would seem that a reason that Commerce offers as a justification for not including a second respondent appears to be that it did not catch a pretty serious mistake, reliance on some very erroneous CBP data until later in the proceeding, and contrast that with the facts in the YC Rubber case. Is that kind of what your basis of your distinction is?
Well, there are several distinctions. At the point in YC Rubber where Commerce decided not to review an additional respondent, it was still before the preliminary results were published, and the court found error specifically with its decision not to review an additional respondent at that time. In this case, the error that the court identified with relying on what turned out to be unreliable CBP data is a separate issue. At the point where Commerce first considered whether to add an additional respondent, it was already well past the final results. And to the extent that Your Honor is suggesting Commerce could have avoided this in the first instance by not relying on that erroneous CBP data, that may be true, but CBP data is generally very reliable. This is a very unusual case where these particular portions of the data turned out to be unrealistic. And it's also extremely rare for a case like this to occur where Commerce, so to speak, deselects a mandatory respondent later on. So there's little concern about this becoming a recurring issue or some manner for Commerce to circumvent the rule of relying on more than one mandatory respondent. And in any event, of course, Commerce would have no incentive to do so. As you know, government officials are presumed to be acting in good faith, and that's exactly what happened here. Commerce made a mistake while acting in good faith, and at the point where they had the option of redressing that mistake by adding another mandatory respondent, it was already so far in the process that it was more than reasonable for Commerce to determine that the marginal benefits of adding an additional mandatory respondent were significantly outweighed by the administrative burden at that point. So the only question was whether Commerce made a reasonable determination at that point, that is a year and a half after the final results, that was within the bounds of the discretion left to it by the Federal Circuit.
It says otherwise reasonable, right? I'm not sure it situates us at a particular moment in time, but you articulate that very well. What I'm concerned about is were the court to accept that justification here, then it might suggest in future cases that if the mistake is caught later, that creates a kind of a get out of jail free card, and that Commerce doesn't have to go back. The court is well aware and respects the fact that Commerce has a lot on its plate, a lot of different investigations. You and Mr. Forbes, well, Mr. Forbes and his colleagues at the department are work on, and yet this was a serious error. No one is suggesting bad faith on the part of the department, a pretty serious error caught pretty far along in the process. And why wouldn't the court ruling in Commerce's favor here, allowing Commerce to use this as a justification to use a single respondent, why wouldn't that come along and you and your colleagues at Justice would come before us in the future and say, well, see, the court accepted that justification. And so really, if the error is caught very early, as in the YC Rubber case, that's kind of what the Federal Circuit meant, but it didn't mean this.
Well, as I've said, Your Honor, it's very of course that there are many cases where late in the process, through litigation, some kind of error is identified and some kind of remand is necessary, but it's very rare for the remand to involve the deselection of a mandatory respondent, usually identifying the size of each exporter based on CBP data is a very straightforward process. This was a very unusual case. So the concern that this will be a repeating issue is not very significant. And in future cases, it will be a different situation because when parties raise issues relating to respondent selection, Commerce will view those issues in light of YC Rubber, with the awareness that if it makes an error with respect to respondent selection, that could later on pose an issue under the YC Rubber's holding. But in this case, where Commerce made the decision to rely on the CVP data years ago, before YC Rubber was decided, with no way of knowing that later down the line, it would ultimately deselect a mandatory respondent and be left in this position where it has to decide whether to go back and review another respondent and incur that burden simply to, you know, have more than one included in the rate. And again, more than one, it doesn't make it twice as accurate or twice as representative. We can get into those numbers later, but in this case, the mandatory respondent that was selected was one of the largest exporters and was representative, and it was reasonable for Commerce to determine that the actual benefits of reviewing an additional respondent.
I don't think the parties contest representativeness, do they?
I'm sorry, contest whether they're one of the largest?
Whether the remaining respondent is representative.
I would contest that, yes.
Oh, I didn't pick that up in our papers, but we'll come back. I'll come back to you. So average. The term average in the statute does suggest more than one, pretty strongly suggests that. Both this court and the Federal Circuit have said so, right?
Yes, and the court, of course, considered that precise question in YC Rubber, but the Federal Circuit chose to frame its decision very carefully and say that the question is whether the statute permits Commerce to review a single exporter or producer when multiple have requested review and Commerce has not demonstrated that it was otherwise reasonable to calculate the all others rate based on only one. So the Federal Circuit was pretty clear that it was stating a general rule, a strong preference for more than one respondent being included in the all others rate, but then under the circumstances of a specific case, it certainly left open the door that there might be a justification for deviating from that. And as I've mentioned, this is a very unusual case. This is not something that's going to start coming up all the time, where this error in CBP data led to the unusual result of deselecting a mandatory respondent. So there's little concern about this becoming a recurring issue. And as I've said, sort of uniquely, this case was many of the decisions were made before YC Rubber. And at the point where the decision in YC Rubber was made and Commerce had an opportunity to consider it, it had to consider what the situation was at that point, which was a year and a half after the final results. It had already gone through the process of a full review of two mandatory respondents. And due to circumstances it hadn't foreseen, it had to determine whether to go back and review another mandatory respondent. It seems like precisely the sort of circumstance that would constitute it being otherwise reasonable. It's hard to think of a more kind of unusual set of facts that would justify deviating from that typical rule.
One could also say, therefore, that if this is a one-off, that it's just one additional instance where Commerce would have to put in that extra work. So it wouldn't amount to that great a burden. And similarly, if the court were to say, this is not an adequate rationale, it would have the effect of maybe punctuating for the analysts at the department that this foundational decision of respondent selection is one that needs to be taken with great care since it's foundational to the rest of the investigation. Wouldn't that have a positive effect, given that all of the analysts, obviously, Mr. Forbes, they all have big case flows. They have to figure out how to prioritize their time. Were the court to not accept this rationale, it would then have the effect of causing them to focus a little more carefully on this very important foundational element of their investigation.
Perhaps, Your Honor. It's not necessary to motivate Commerce to take this issue seriously. Commerce, of course, takes its determination seriously and acts in good faith when doing so. The court has already found that it committed error here. And after that finding, Commerce is already fully motivated to be extra careful in additional cases. As I've said, it's very unusual for this kind of error to exist in the CDP data, which is usually very straightforward. Now that Commerce is aware that errors like this may occur in rare cases, it doesn't require any additional incentive. The question for the court is simply whether at the point when YC Rubber was decided and when it had been required to go back and deselect a mandatory respondent, at that point, was Commerce acting unreasonably or abusing its discretion or acting in a way that was not in accordance with law when it declined to review an additional respondent. And the language that the Federal Circuit used makes clear that there was a window of discretion, and Commerce simply looked at the language of the Federal Circuit, applied its discretion, and it did so in a reasonable way, you know, even if the court would weigh those factors differently. The burden of going back is very substantial. The benefit is marginal given the specific facts about the volume of exports by each the mandatory respondent and potential other mandatory respondents. So that's the real question here, is whether Commerce was within its discretion.
Benefit is marginal. How do you come to that conclusion?
Again, it's a little difficult to discuss without looking at the volume of exporters, but the mandatory respondent that was selected was one of the largest exporters with a large volume that was representative, and added an additional respondent. Again, it's a little bit difficult without specifics, but I don't think it's fair to say that it would tremendously improve the representativeness or, I guess I would reserve.
Okay, we can, to the extent that I'm going to pivot to Mr. Brophy, give you a little bit of time to catch your breath. To the extent that you would like to, or any party would like to, we're prepared to limit the remainder of the hearing to those with clearance, appropriate APO clearance. Mr. Brophy.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. First, let me just address the points made by the government. With regard to the administrative burden, I mean, SEMAL already submitted a voluntary response, so they already have one response on the record from SEMAL. They have reviewed SEMAL in multiple reviews previously and since. They're very familiar with the company. If this is probably one of the least burdensome options available. So I don't see the great burden that they're claiming. Second of all, even if it is a burden, I mean, Commerce made a legal error. There has to be a remedy for that legal error for those respondents who have appealed, including Sen Mao. Now, regard to the issue that they're one of the
broke. Well, the law doesn't. You say there has to be a remedy.
I think they've removed.
Pardon me.
I think justice requires a remedy.
Okay, so they've removed the erroneous data with the
included. They made a mistake. Yes.
Right, and so it's down to the respondent where there is no question about erroneous data. So, and the law doesn't, the Federal Circuit, the CIT do not require in every case, right?
The Federal Circuit left an out. They said otherwise reasonable to select one
right.
Mandatory.
So justice would enable them to exercise discretion, right?
There's obviously some discretion. I think on a case-by-case basis, that has to be decided whether it is otherwise reasonable to use one mandatory. And their main point here seems to be that Baroque Timber was one of the largest. I mean, in every administrative review or any investigation, you can find one respondent who's one of the largest. So I don't see how that solves the problem.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that Sen Mao has provided a voluntary response. What more? Since they've already provided some information to Commerce, what more would Commerce have to do and look at to be able to select Sen Mao as an additional mandatory?
Well, to fully review SendMail as an additional mandatory would require a number of additional steps. It would be issuing supplemental questionnaires based on the answers that SendMail gave. It would also issue questionnaires and potentially supplemental questionnaires to the government of China. Since this involves the Export Buyer's Credit Program, Commerce would also potentially be investigating domestic customers of SendMail. Altogether, this is, you know, most of the investigative process remains. This is something that Commerce usually has approximately a year to do. It would have to have time to give the parties opportunities to submit benchmarking information. Then, of course, examining all the information provided, providing preliminary results.
Is she exaggerating, Mr. Brophy, or are those valid things that if the court remands and directs Commerce to select another mandatory, aren't those actually things that Commerce is likely to have to do?
There probably would be a supplemental questionnaire. Maybe there'd be two supplemental questionnaires. As far as the U.S. customers go, I mean, no one has ever passed Commerce's test on getting all the information for their customers, so that probably wouldn't even become an issue because the customers probably, as in past reviews, would not respond. I don't think it would take that much time, Your Honor. And also, I mean, I think looking back at YC Rubber and the record of that case, I think they did select another mandatory after that remand. So I don't see why they couldn't do the same thing here.
But Ms. Geddes is saying on behalf of Commerce that there are these very high hurdles and we are far further along in the proceeding. Those are her arguments.
And I don't think the hurdles are that high, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And also, I also take issue with the idea that they only found this error on remand. I mean, multiple parties submitted comments identifying the errors in the data and requested quantity and value questionnaires be issued, including petitioner. In addition, GUYU submitted their response to the questionnaire, a month or two after respondent selection, where they reported their actual exports to the United States. So the error was obvious at that point. Commerce essentially just put blinders on after respondent selection and refused to consider these issues, but they easily could have identified this issue during the review. It didn't have to wait until remand.
Mr. Ludwikowski was nodding as you were making your points. Would you care to add to what Mr. Brophy has said?
Your Honor, I second what Mr. Brophy just said. Commerce had time early on in this review to catch that error, and we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for them plowing full steam ahead and continuing with GUYU as a mandatory, and then continue on, which led us to this place, which led us to the appeal. So I agree that it could have been remedied a lot earlier.
Yes, Ms. Geddes.
That may be true that this could have been remedied earlier. It's worth noting that Commerce had also given Jiangsu GUYU a chance to respond to the respondent in selection information up front, which Jiangsu GUYU didn't initially take. The issues were identified later than they should have been by either Commerce or the other parties. But importantly, in YC Rubber, the original issue was the decision not to investigate an additional respondent. So in that case, if the court hadn't ordered Commerce to go back and select an additional respondent, there would have been no remedy. But this case is entirely different. The issue was erroneous CBP data. The remedy for that is to exclude that data, to deselect the mandatory respondent that should not have been selected. But then the question is simply, was the rate based on only one mandatory respondent's data, was that representative, or was it necessary to go back and select an additional respondent? The parties aren't entitled to a particular number of respondents in all cases. They're entitled to an all others rate that is based on mandatory respondents who are representative, and that. Yeah, the main issue is representativeness, and in this case, Commerce made a reasonable determination mm-hmm. that the remaining mandatory respondent was representative. Mm-hmm. So the parties have received the remedies that they're entitled to here.
Now, Mr. Brophy, thank you, Ms. Geddes. Mr. Brophy, can we come back to you on the representativeness?
Yes, Your Honor.
Of the.
I mean, our point was, I mean, are some of the things are confidential, but our point would simply be that the government is not claiming that Baroque timber represented 90% of exports or 80% or even 50% of exports during the period. They're not putting a number on it. All they're saying is they're one of the largest. I don't see how one company can be representative if it doesn't represent the majority of exports during the period. And whether it's adding another.
Allow me to interrupt you with apologies. Mr. Hugh, I think let's move to a confidential session because I want to dig into this a